Thank you everyone for coming this evening. I want to discuss with you tonight something that I was speaking about at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Melbourne a few days ago to about 300 students. You see, what's happening is that the subject of meditation is becoming very mainstream and very commercialized. Suddenly, everyone is interested. How can I meditate as an escape from stress and anxiety? You see, our computers have gotten faster, the music has gotten faster, the communication systems have gotten faster. Meanwhile, the level of stress and anxiety has increased so much. But people are interested in how somehow they can capture some calm in their life. According to latest statistics, 10 million people in the USA claim to be practicing meditation. That's almost three times the population of New Zealand. It used to be that people would think about meditation as something very exotic, esoteric. Now it's becoming so mainstream that as I travel around the world, at airports, right next to the prayer chapel, they're now having meditation rooms. Generally, what people think is meditation is focusing your mind on some image or some syllable or your own breath. And in this way, your metabolism slows down, your heart slows down, your breathing slows down, your thoughts slow down. And if you really achieve the perfection of meditation, as it is commercially known, the theta brain waves, the brain waves that predominate just when you're about to fall asleep, they increase even though you're awake. And then you have attained the supreme destination. So this is what most people think meditation is. Slow down your respiration, slow down your heartbeat. In this way, people hope that they'll get some calmness and sanity in their life. Now, we're all for people slowing down a bit and being more reflective and contemplative. But we should understand that just because our life functions are slowing down doesn't mean we have actually made the best use of our life. There are animal species that can slow down their life functions. Maybe some of you know specifically. Anyone know specifically animals that can do that? Animal species?
Bears?
They actually slow down. When they hibernate, they slow down their...
Their heartbeat about 4 times a minute.
When they're hibernating?
Yeah.
Any other animals? Must be some others too. So is that the perfection of meditation? To slow down your heartbeat to 4 beats a minute? The bears are already doing that. I think there's other animals too that can do that. Human beings are supposed to have a life which reveals the ultimate spiritual reality. The ultimate spiritual reality is not simply a situation in which your heartbeat slows down, your breathing slows down. The ultimate reality means that you have tapped into the spiritual energy beyond the material energy. As long as your life is contained within the material energy, that is not real meditation. Otherwise, you see, everyone is meditating. It's not that simply those who officially proclaim themselves as meditators are the meditators. For example, would you say that out of the 10 million people in the USA who say that they are meditators? All right, take that as a group. Would you say that no one else in the country is meditating? No. All 250 million people are meditating on something. So the point is, what is the subject of your meditation? Just like when I was coming back on the airplane late last night from Melbourne, the main meditation on the airplane was the rugby match. The airplane pilot would read off the scores. Because it was Air New Zealand, the airplane crew, we were getting on the Aussies case, offering condolences like that. So, that was the meditation of the people. They were applauding when they would hear the scores. May not be a subject matter for children all the time, you know. You may have to. So the people were meditating. There's so many kinds of meditations you can have. Doesn't mean you're spiritual. You can meditate on money. You can meditate on your physical desires. You can meditate on success. Everyone is meditating on something. You can look at your life and see that. Who is not meditating? Now, what is it that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that is of value to everyone, since everyone is meditating? In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna points out what is the highest meditation. Krishna says of all yogis, yogi means someone who controls their mind and senses according to a plan. So Krishna says, of all the different types of yogis, the highest one is the one who is always meditating on me, on Krishna. Because Krishna is the source of all energy. Yes, there is energy all around us, and we are energy. But what is the source of all energy? How do you connect with that source? And what is the nature of that source of all energy? Real meditation deals with these issues. Now we're speaking about how a yogi is someone who controls the mind and senses according to a predetermined plan. Most people never think like that. Most people think that you just live your life throughout the day, however your senses want to act, whatever they want to interact with, you just let it happen generally. If there's any hope of getting any kind of favorable stimulation, even though it's temporary, then why not? Your senses are hungry, they're active, you want to do things with your senses. That's the way most people take it. But a yogi is someone who has a plan for how all the senses will act. This is the lifestyle of a truly intelligent person. You know ahead of time what you want to do with your senses. You're not surprised by external stimuli. And you don't get swept off your feet by sensual attractions. You have your own purpose for your senses, and you're directing them in that way. That is yoga. Yoga is more than stretching the body and becoming flexible and losing weight. Real yoga means to control the senses according to a predetermined plan. And the highest yoga, as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, is when you focus your mind and senses upon the Supreme Absolute Truth, cause of all causes, source of everything. That is Krishna, the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure. Meditation means how to always think of the best thing. Now, what is the best thing in our life? What do we know? That is the best thing. Remember the old song? They say the best things in life are free, but that doesn't mean a thing to me. I want money. What is it that you want? What is it that you want to focus upon for maximizing your life? What is it you want to think about all the time? What is it you want to strive for? Look at those questions and then you'll find the direction your life is heading into. Most persons can't think about these things. They're just drifting along, following the ways of the general population. Yeah, what do you think? You think this is good? Yeah, I think it's good. What's going to happen tomorrow? What are you guys doing? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can go along with that. What's the latest? Oh, really? Okay. Oh, I better get into it. Most people drift along like that. With no clear vision of how they can utilize their mind and senses for the highest purpose. They don't know what the highest purpose is.
Well, it's all up to you, you know. You just got to decide what's the highest for you.
People think there's no ultimate reality that is beyond everyone's individual subjectivity. So they think, well, you think one way, I think another way. Whatever, what does it matter? Let's just try to feel good, each in our own way. If we can help one another feel a little bit good, even though it's done in our own way, okay, great. If we can work with each other for a short period of time, if we can interact with each other for a short period of time and get a few good feelings, hey, what more can you want out of life? Reminds me of one New Agey type of blurb I read in which you were supposed to explore the divine mystery of relationship. Two embodied mysteries coming together in a process of alchemy in which they undergo permutations and combinations. Yes, it is true that the two embodied mysteries, because each person is a mystery unto himself, herself. Each person doesn't know. Who am I? They don't know. So, yes, people are a mystery unto themselves, and then you bring two mysteries together, and you have a greater mystery. Real meditation means to become aware, number one, of our non-material identity, and number two, to become aware of the supreme spiritual entity. That actually is the purpose of meditation. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita, the authorized spiritual textbook of India. the purpose of focusing your mind is so that you'll be steadying your attention upon the best thing. But no one knows what the best thing is. How can the best thing be matter when matter is temporary and ruled by time? Matter is deteriorating. The best thing is spiritual. Spiritual means no beginning and no end. Ever fresh. The opposite of the material energy. The material energy is running down, is deteriorating, it's becoming stale. This is what disappoints you so much in your endeavors to get material happiness. Even when you finally get what you want, that thing or person you want deteriorates. Because that's the nature of things ruled by time, whether they be objects or relationships, because things and relationships are, in the material world, are of the nature of the material energy, they must lose their freshness. And this is what frustrates you. You really want an ever-fresh situation, ever-fresh relationship. But you know it doesn't happen that way. So many of you have entered into relationships with a dream that each passing day will grow more and more, will discover newer and newer things. You know it's not like that, yeah. You know you're dealing with limitation. So if you want the relationship to last, you agree to tolerate each other's limitations. But as far as an ever-increasing wonderland of newer and newer horizons, you know it doesn't happen that way. Like the song, "We've Only Just Begun to Live." We'll start out walking and then we'll run, sharing horizons that are new to us, watching the signs along the way. Anything within the influence of the material energy has limitation and deterioration. So therefore, either you learn to tolerate or you just toss it all in and keep searching futilely for a material situation that will not deteriorate. You'll never find that. So at best, all one can do in the material realm is to tolerate. Yes, I know there's limitation. I know things will run down. I know things will become stale, but let's stick it out. That's the best you can do. But the spirit's energy is different. Because the spirit's energy comes from Krishna. Actually, the material energy also comes from Krishna. But Krishna has the material energy acting in such a way that you can't see the spiritual connection. Just like clouds cover the sun. Even though clouds are generated by the sun evaporates ocean water, and that water becomes clouds. Although the clouds are created by the sun, their purpose is to block the sun. Similarly, although the material energy comes from Krishna, its purpose is to block Krishna from our view. Because people in material life don't want to understand any supreme source of everything. They just want to feel that it's me and my senses and whatever's around me, me and my goals, me and my plans, me and my failures, that's what it's all about, nothing else. So they meditate like that. It's just me and mine. Now, meditate. I'm Howard Spine now. Breathing slowing down. Feather waves increasing. Yes. I'm meditating on the flame of a candle. Yes, I'm meditating on a syllable. Any syllable will do. The whole point is just to slow down your bodily functions. Become free from anxiety. Meditate on the incoming, outgoing breath. There's no doubt that by meditating on your incoming and outgoing breath, you will become calmer. You will become more peaceful, but not in a way that will get you spiritual attainment. But most people cannot discriminate between mere relaxation and spiritual experience. People are so full of anxiety and so full of stress that they equate mere relaxation with spirituality. This is how precious relaxation has become. Relaxation is so rare. A state of calmness has become so rare these days that if someone has it, you say, "Ooh, you're spiritual, aren't you?" But as Julian here was pointing out, when the bears hibernate, their heartbeat slows down to 4 beats a minute. Try to do that. Try to get your heart to beat only 4 times a minute. The bears must be the topmost meditators. I remember whenever I go for cardiograph, where they measure your heartbeat, the cardiograph reading or something. You go for a medical checkup and they, see how your heart is beating. So the doctors, afterwards when they're looking at the chart, they always look at me. Your heart is, it's beating so slowly. How is that possible? I just look at him like, well, what's the big deal? That's because my heart beats slow doesn't mean I've achieved the supreme destination. But they are like, overawed. Like, wow, do you meditate? They look at you like, your heart beats slow, your cholesterol level is low. Wow, the perfection of life. This is how harried and hectic life has become. These little things become so glorified. You must have true peace. You must have true contentment. Just look at these cardiograph readings. The body is one thing, but the spiritual awareness is another thing. Of course, it does help in your spiritual quest to have a calm lifestyle. But it's not that there is an automatic 100% correlation between calmness and spiritual experience, as the example of the bear shows. The body is matter, but our identity is spirit soul. Therefore, real yoga, real meditation, involves focusing upon spiritual subject matter. Now in your life you have to decide, how are you going to do that? What is spiritual subject matter and how are you going to focus on that? What is the nature of the ultimate reality? Personal or impersonal? You're actually not attracted to anything impersonal. That's why everybody wants relationships that are satisfying, alluring, and attractive. Because you're not an impersonalist. But because people speculate, they think, well, whatever is spiritual must be not like what I've experienced in the material realm. I've experienced in the material realm personality, individuality. Therefore, spiritual must mean no personal, no individual. What Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita is that the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal. Otherwise, how can you, as parts of the Supreme Absolute Truth, be personal? How can the source lack that which the things that come from the source have? You are all parts of Krishna. You have emanated from Krishna as Krishna's energy. Now, how is it that you, which come from the source, are personal, yet the source is not personal? How can that be? So the highest meditation is how to focus on the Supreme Personality of God. That That is not mythology. Just like our personal existence is not mythology. We are persons, we are individuals, and we're striving for our goals. The Supreme Absolute Truth, the source of everything, is also personal. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, he has nothing to achieve because he already has everything. It's hard for us to understand how someone can act even though they don't need anything. Krishna acts simply for his own pleasure. He has the potency to fulfill all of his desires. That is God. We know what it's like to desire as tiny living entities. But we do now have the potency to fulfill all our desires. Therefore, we're disappointed and disillusioned. Who here can say that he or she has the potency to fulfill one's own desires? No, you have to depend on others. You have to go outside of yourself to depend on things outside of you, external to you, in your attempts at satisfaction. That's why you have to have things. You have to accumulate things. You have to accumulate relationships, because you have to go outside of yourself. Otherwise, there's this feeling of incompleteness. So basically, when you establish relationships, you're turning to someone else and saying, I feel incomplete, make me feel complete. That's what's going on. Is there a hope that by your being with me, I'll feel complete? I'll get over this gnawing feeling of incompleteness. You're going to help me out in this way. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you feel complete. You're going to help me feel complete. Let's make a pact together to overcome these feelings of incompleteness. And then we become very fearful. But suppose I'm helping you to be complete, but you're not helping me feel complete. There's got to be, a balanced budget, Just as much as I'm making you feel complete, you have to make me feel complete. And this way, negotiations are constantly going on. And you keep an eye on the whole situation. Profit and loss. I made you feel more complete last month, but this month you're not making me feel so complete. There's constant dickering and negotiation going on. And then, finally, when you start to think, wait a minute, you really are shortchanging me. I'm just not getting that complete feeling from you anymore. That's what people call the loving feeling. You're not making me feel complete anymore. This reminds me of a popular song when I was very young. You probably, most of you have never heard of it. Very interesting words that describe the human condition. When you give more than you get, you're in danger. You may find that you're in love with a stranger. That's the accurate picture of the situation. When you find out that you're losing, it's time to get on moving. There's danger, heartbreak there. Start packing up your heart. When there's nothing more to be gained, don't keep holding on in vain. So, this is what people call relationship. If we would get some deeper insight into this whole relationship meditation if we substitute the word love for completeness. So when, in your moments of rapture, your moments of diplomacy, when you tell someone, I love you, what you're really saying is, you make me feel complete. That's what you're really saying. For the moment, I feel so complete. And I'm going to help you to feel complete. That's what's really going on. Now, can it be done? Can two tiny living entities actually make each other feel complete? Or is it a sentiment of the moment? You see, without a connection with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the complete whole, without a connection to Krishna, how can you feel complete? Another tiny living entity cannot help you feel complete. That can only be done by the complete whole. We are not the complete. We're tiny little things. So if we connect to the complete, to the supreme complete, then we get a genuine feeling of completeness, and we can help and relate to someone else properly. When everyone is in relation to the supreme complete, they get a genuine feeling of completeness. And then you can relate properly to others because you're all going through the supreme complete. That is Krishna consciousness. But if on your own you present yourself to someone, yeah, I can make you feel complete. What can you do? You're just a tiny little thing, subject to death, old age, and disease. Your mind is limited. Your body is limited. But, you know, spurred on by passion, you say so many things. Yeah, I make you feel complete. Just stick with me. You'll see. This is false ego. Therefore, so much of what people call love is just false ego. Presenting yourself as I can do it for you. It's all in me. And the other person, temporarily anyway, replies, yes. Just as you can do it for me, I can do it for you. Two tiny living entities who don't know who they are, why they're in this world, where they came from, where they're going, but they speak all these words. Actually, you'd be surprised to know how people are very afraid to be alone. Because when you're alone, you have to think about yourself and your incompleteness too much. But when there's somebody else around, you can bury your life in someone else's life. You don't have to think deeply about the basic condition of incompleteness that characterizes material life. Now, does this mean, does my presentation now mean there's no love? Yes, there is real love, but most people don't know anything about it. Real love is in relation to the supreme, complete source of everything. If the tiny, limited living entity connects with the supreme entity, then there can be real love, because the supreme, complete whole has unlimited quantities of what we need to feel complete. But you know what it's like, those of you who have experienced these things, in terms of ordinary relationships in this world, that is. You know what it's like when you treat someone like they have an unlimited storehouse of what you need. You always find out there's a limit. The well runs dry. So, at that point, either the relationship breaks, or else you make plans how to tolerate the shortages. Just like now in the recently, past couple days in the USA, they have these massive power blackouts. So often in relationships, there are these blackouts. You know, there's no more power. All the lights go out. In terms of, you know, we can't see how we're going to make it together anymore. Because there's limitation. The energy supply is limited. What can two tiny, incomplete living entities really do for each other? They can make as big a factory as they want, but they're not going to be able to make love. Not possible. Love can only truly flow in relationship with the complete whole. Now, if two living entities, two limited living entities, relate to each other based on their ultimate relation with the supreme complete whole, then they can do something for each other. In other words, if two limited living entities help each other to understand the supreme complete, then their relationship is in touch and nourished by the ultimate reality. Nourished by Krishna, the supreme complete whole. Therefore, real meditation means how to bring into your life the spiritual energies of the supreme complete whole, the spiritual energies of Krishna. That's real meditation. Not just slowing down your heart, slowing down your breathing. Any animal can do that. Krishna consciousness means the art, science, and culture of how to meditate upon Krishna. Not only passively, but in an active way. Not to just sit and wait for Krishna to do something for you, but no, to be proactive and do something for Krishna. Relationships are reciprocal. So why should we simply sit back and inactively, passively meditate on Krishna when even better is to actively seek to satisfy Krishna? You can just take the example of any ordinary relationship, although illusory. Would you want someone simply to inactively meditate on you all the time? At first you would feel, proud of that, and just see someone is thinking of me all the time, meditating on me all the time. But after a while, what would you think? Okay, now, it's great that you're thinking about me. What are you going to do for me? What kind of active things are you going to do for me? So beyond simply appreciating the presence of the Supreme Absolute Truth is to actively engage in the service of the Supreme Absolute Truth. That is real Krishna consciousness, the topmost meditation. You think, what is the best thing that I can do for Krishna? And then you act in that way. This produces the most intense meditative state. Contemplation, meditation on the Supreme, and then acting dynamically with your mind and senses to please Krishna. Then you start to understand what real love is. Otherwise, we're just playing around in this world. Actually, we waste a lot of time. Have you ever seen some little kids play? We have some little kids here. They run out of the room now. Have you ever seen them? They start pretending, I'm this and you're that, and they take their play so seriously. Maybe you can remember when you were a little kid saying very seriously to your mother or father, I'm going out to play. Very important business, I'm going out to play. And the parents, oh yes, okay, go out and play. Very important things you have to do. Or if you ever try to stop some little kids from playing, they get offended. We're playing! Don't you know? The whole world's at stake. We're playing! Sure, almost everyone here has done that when you're a little kid. And then you get very indignant and angry that your parents dare to interrupt your play, right? And maybe you remember as little kids pretending you were soldiers or cowboys or... I don't know how it is these days, but decades ago, the little boys would play like they were soldiers and cowboys. The girls would play house. The boys would have their toy guns, and cowboy guns or soldier guns. And the girls, they would have toy stoves, toy utensils. Just taking on different roles, taking it so seriously. Well, that's how the adults live. There's not much difference between adults and children, you know? It's just the adults take themselves so seriously.
We are adults. We have serious responsibilities. Paying bills. Spending money. Credit cards. Establishing and breaking relationships. We are adults.
What's the difference? The adults don't know who they are. They don't know why they're in this world. They don't know where they're going, but...
We are adults. We have driver's licenses.
You are children. You don't know. You're just playing around. You'll grow up one day and understand the real world of responsibility. Earning and spending money. Making and breaking relationships.
You understand?
What's the difference? No difference. If you take the adult pride away, it'll be more easy for you to understand what is Krishna consciousness, what is real meditation. If you take away the pride of being a consumer, and someone who has to be constantly entertained, then you'll have the humility to understand what is the Supreme Absolute Truth, what is the soul, what is the Supreme Soul. Krishna consciousness brings you in touch with the highest meditation. Otherwise, everyone's meditating, whether it's on rugby or money or success or different kinds of temporary pleasures. Everyone's meditating. Now you have to find the highest object to focus your consciousness upon. Krishna consciousness means the highest object to focus upon is Krishna. The unlimited reservoir of personal pleasure. That's the best kind of pleasure. Personal pleasure. Relationship pleasure. Krishna is the unlimited source of relationship pleasure. That is God. If you simply have some tiny idea of the Supreme Absolute Truth as creator, maintainer, destroyer, that's better than nothing, but it's actually very elementary. And it's not enough to produce the highest states of meditation. The highest states of meditation are produced when you understand that beyond the role of the Supreme, beyond the role of Krishna as creator, maintainer, and destroyer, is the activity of Krishna as the Supreme Relationship Maker, the Supreme Relationship Enthraller. The very things that you want to do and fail at. Krishna does an unlimited perfection. Therefore, we should meditate upon Krishna. All right. Maybe you have some questions?
To meditate on a personal image, a personal form, we must, the individual must have been seen how to visualize the Krishna is not powerful, omnipotent, omnipresent, but how to make a personal image of somebody who is so vast and so big and so.
Because Krishna is all powerful. He can reveal himself because he has unlimited possibilities.
So, what do you mean to me?
Krishna describes how he is. Just think of me in this way. Someone who wants to meditate on you, if they hear from you, about you, then that's the best way how to focus upon you. You tell them, I do this, I do that. These are my qualities, these are my activities. Then that forms a strong meditative state in the mind of the person concentrating upon you. So Krishna said, I'm like this, this is what I do, think about it. And what do so many bogus yogis from India say? Yes, yes, Krishna is saying like this, but actually, let's push all that aside and focus on the impersonal. This is what has ruined India. Krishna says, I am like this, I am like that. You think about me, you'll come to me. I said, no. But actually, what Krishna means is, just push it aside and just focus on the white light. It's like you're talking to me. I said, but actually, there's not a person there. Let's just push you aside and just focus on the undefined reality. How would you feel? Therefore, we should understand Krishna as Krishna presents himself. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtham. The impersonal Brahman is based upon me. Me means person. When Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya bhavabho matta sarvam bhavartate, is Sanskrit. He's from India, so I'm quoting Sanskrit. Krishna says, there's nothing beyond me. Matapatram nanya kinjit asti dharanjaya. Nothing beyond me. That means not even the impersonal. So you have to take Bhagavad Gita straight on. A person knows how to be impersonal. But in person cannot be personal. Just like if you don't like somebody, you can give the cold shoulder. Ladies are especially expert at this, yeah? When you don't get what you want, you have the cold shoulder weapon. When you pretend the other guy doesn't exist, right? Isn't that? Yeah. If you're angry at your husband, yeah, you just kind of, you know, act like he doesn't exist. Yeah, and you know, the men can't handle that. They just can't stand being ignored. They just can't stand, you know, being treated like they're not the, you know, the proprietors of the universe. They hate it. Finally, they start yelling at you, just stop doing that, I'm here, don't you know? It's me! So, that's when the lady or anyone acts like that, that's being impersonal. But it takes a person to be impersonal. So, this is logic. Logic is not the ultimate proof. The ultimate proof is what is contained in the Shastra, in the Vedic texts, the law books. That's the ultimate proof. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the impersonal is based upon me, the person, Maham, Aham. Brahmana pratishtaham aham. I am the pratishtha. I'm the basis of the impersonal. I am the person. This misunderstanding of the opposite has caused so much havoc in India. When Krishna says there's nothing beyond him, that means nothing beyond Bhagavan, the personal possessor of all opulence. Now, because outside of India had very little high spiritual knowledge, so many people outside of India have taken advantage of by impersonalism coming out of India. The ultimate is undefinable. The ultimate is no individuality, no person, just a, what, you know, the whatever. It's just is, and you are it, and it is there.
That'll be $50 for this meditation class.
So should we all share adult status with our children?
In a spiritual sense, yes. Give up your unnecessary burdens and your unnecessary struggles. You want to bring back the wonder into your life, first understand, who am I? Why am I in this world? But because we have so many false obligations and duties and burdens, all the wonder of life has disappeared. And we march like soldiers through the jungle with our weapons, our senses. I know what my mission is. I know I am here. My senses are hungry. Where are the sense objects? Where is there a relationship? I'm on the hunt. Yes, this is a burden, this is a strain, this is a struggle. You come into this world with nothing, you leave with nothing. But in between your birth and death, we madly claim everything. Mine, 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 for me. You ever seen some little kids do that? They're quite blatant about it. Mine, mine, you can't take it from me. Mine. And they, if there's brothers and sisters, or brothers and brothers, or sisters and sisters, they fight, taking something from one. And,
you know, I want it,
and then the parents have to come, now, now, children, share whatever you have, as if the parents do that. This is a family, share everything with your brothers and sisters. As if the parents live like that with the other adults, you know? No. What do the parents do with the other adults? This is mine. You can't have it. This is our property. This is our country. Real meditation doesn't mean to unlock the inner child. Real meditation means to uncover your spiritual identity as part of Krishna, the Supreme Reality. The Supreme Reality is all attractive. All attractiveness is not impersonal. How can something impersonal attract you? All impersonalism can do is give you relief, but not positive, dynamic activity in relationship. Impersonalism just gives you relief. No more desires. No more individuality. No more relationships. Just be with it. It will be with me, and I will. I am it. It is me. Breathe deeply. How long can you keep that? I was speaking at Melbourne Uni, another batch of students. I was telling them how, when I was touring in Thailand, I came across a monk from England who had spent like 15 years in Thailand as a monk. He's a Buddhist monk. And he had become known as, renowned as a teacher. So young people from all over Europe, especially England, Germany, would come and to his retreats. And for 10 days, they would have to be quiet and just sit for 4 hours a day watching their incoming and outgoing breath. Then after 10 days, they would really feel like they had accomplished something. Yeah, we did a meditation retreat. And then they would go to this famous island in Thailand, Koh Phangan, and just party night and day. Anyone here been there? Huh? Any? Yes, you have? Yeah? You went there? You got into the scene there?
Not a party, but...
Well, you knew about them, right? You knew about the party scene there. Just, you know, all night long, you know, raving all night long. People from all over Europe, so many places in the world, and just, you know, taking drugs, and they're stoned out of their mind, and, you know, the magic island in Thailand, Koh Phangan. So after 10 days of no talking, sitting on cushions 4 hours a day, then they leave and just get wasted. But when they go back to England, go back to Germany, they tell, I did a 10-day meditation retreat. 10 days silent meditation. So anyway, this Buddhist monk, he was telling me how he's been practicing for 15 years, meditating on the coming out, going breath, and he had even built a hut for himself, a solitary hut outside the monastery. And he was going to go for the special intense meditation, just being alone for 5 years in his hut, meditating on his breath. And he actually did it. And he was saying, I achieved such wonderful states of tranquility and calmness. Amazing. My heart slowed down, my breathing slowed down, and my mind also slowed down. Not that I have anything against someone having a calm mind. It's just that these things are not the ultimate. Anyway, we'll go on with the story. So he said, there I was after 5 years of the solitary meditation in a hut outside the monastery. Mind slowed down, amazing clarity and calmness and tranquility. Then he was saying, one of the villagers, if you've ever been to third world countries or less developed countries, villagers like to blare their radios, you know, their boom boxes. It's a sign that they are technologically with it, you know, to have a boom box and, you know, blast it as you're walking through the bush or walking through the jungle. So, someone came by his hut, the monk's hut, blaring their boom box after 5 years of his solitary meditation. After 10 years of meditating practice in Thailand, someone came by, and out of the boombox came a song from the 50s, blaring, tell Laura I love her, tell Laura I need her. And so the monk was telling me, all of a sudden when I heard that song, tears started coming out of my eyes. I was shocked. Wait a minute, I'm a monk. I've been meditating for 15 years. What's coming over me? Why? I'm just hearing this sentimental song from the 50s. Tell Laura I love her. Tell Laura I need her. And the tears are coming out of my eyes. That was because he had this unfulfilled personal desire, which cannot be eradicated. So real meditation deals with these personal desires. You can't get rid of your personhood. You can't annihilate your individuality. Not possible. You may have some theory that you can do it. It won't happen. You see, there is false ego and there's real ego. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches you about both. You want to get rid of the false ego, but you cannot get rid of the real ego. The real ego is your spiritual identity as spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. So don't try to annihilate your identity. Try to understand your real identity. The false identity, what is that? What is false ego? Thinking, I am this body, I am this mind. Those things are temporary coverings of the spirit soul, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. But the real ego is, I am part of Krishna, the supreme spiritual reality. That is real ego. You cannot get rid of that. All right, we're going to do a little mantra vibration and meditation. Everyone knows, I believe everybody here knows the Hare Krishna mantra. So we're going to chant a bit together, and then there'll be the banquet.